Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 133 of Growth Marketing Today. Today, I have Adrienne Barnes. She's going to be talking about why a lot of people's personas suck. Now, I've fallen for their trap. Maybe you love them, maybe you hate them. Either way, you probably concluded at some point that personas suck and you should just leave it alone. It's because most buyer personas are built on anecdotes and made up stories and people. So in this episode, Adrienne Barnes, founder of Best Buyer Persona, shares how she uses the Jobs to Be Done framework to create a data-backed, insightful, and useful persona that will help the marketing, sales, and product team. So in episode 133, you learn first the problem with the one and done buyer personas. Second, the three-step process to creating a Jobs to Be Done buyer persona. And third, the best way to get actionable tips and insights from user interviews. Now, before we jump in, I have created a free growth cheat sheet with all the tips and the three-step process that Adrienne has in a one-page PDF. Seriously, why take notes when you can just download mine? You can get it right now at gotoday.fm/133, or you can find that link in the description of this show. Now, get it now, because when I publish the next week's episode, this week's cheat sheet will be gone. I also want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks helped cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts like Adrienne on this show that you and I can learn from. Thanks to Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. Find the top keywords you rank for, track new organic keywords, get more in-depth backlink data, and perform a site audit, all for free using Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. You can sign up for free today at growtoday.fm/Ahrefs. That's Ahrefs. Or find that link in the description of the show. Well, enough about me. Let's jump into my chat with Adrienne. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to chat with Adrienne. We're going to be talking about Jobs to Be Done buyer personas. How's it going? How are things with you?
I'm well. It is middle of a snowmageddon in Texas where I'm at right now. But me and my family, we are warm. If you follow me on Twitter, you've probably seen some of my crazy, I don't know what to do in snow questions. But besides that, learning a new like environment, we are really good, and so happy to be chatting with you about this today.
Yeah, same here. Funny you said that. We had a foot of snow in Toronto yesterday, so I was shoveling. I know, if people are listening to this, your face was just like, oh my goodness, a foot of snow. It was absolutely crazy yesterday.
That's a lot. Yes, that is a lot of snow. I think we've got like a 2-4 inches, but I don't have a snow shovel, so we're just gonna wait till it melts.
Oh, that's true. That's the thing, right? Like, for us, like, I have salt, I have shovel, I have winter tires on, but for people who don't expect it, especially people in Texas, it's like a complete shock.
Has been, for sure.
Yeah. Before we jump into talking about Jobs to Be Done by personas, I'd just love to just want for people to get to know a little bit about you. And you said you're on a hunt for a hobby, and you said one of your hobbies is horseback riding, so... I've never done it. I'm curious, why that, and like, how did you get into horseback riding?
Yeah, so I was on the hunt for a hobby. I realized, you know, I started working and being a freelancer because I needed something that was like for me, right? That was for my own. I'm a mom. I had young kids. They were very young when I started working. We homeschool, so it was like that can kind of really encompass your entire life. Well, now that was 4 years ago. And it's like, well, wait, now this job is really cool and I love it. And it's mine, but it still doesn't like, I don't want it to become to identify me, right? Like I still want to have pieces of myself. And so I was like, well, I need a hobby. My husband, like, if you can see the video, my husband plays guitar. There's guitars all back in my back screen. He's very much into like hunting. So he does all these hunting trips and stuff. And I was like, you have a lot of hobbies and you're really good at finding things you enjoy and investing in it. What could I do? And so we kind of brainstormed for a while. I brainstormed and I thought, you know what? I want to try horseback riding. So I haven't actually done it yet. It's been too cold and I haven't been able to do the lessons, but I'm really excited to give it a shot because it seems like, I mean, people were saying it's kind of a workout, like you get your abs, your core worked out a little bit, which I was like, well, that's a bonus. And I wanted something that was like outside. And, you know, I mean, during quarantine and like lockdown, I wanted something that was kind of community-like, but not in, on top of people, essentially. So that seemed to be a really good fit.
That's really interesting. I mean, I'm guessing you've already started scoping out horseback riding schools. Is that even a thing?
Yeah, I guess so. There are different... Okay, so I live in Texas, so it's not an odd thing for there to be ranches and stuff like that. I've grown up around horses all the time. I just don't ride them. So yeah, there are quite a few little horseback riding schools or studio, like ranches. I think they're just working ranches that have people who... This is kind of how they supplement the horse's income, or this is what they do. So I'm excited to give it a shot and see.
Well, let me know how it goes. That is a pretty interesting, that's a pretty unique hobby, I guess, if you travel around. Like, what's one interesting thing about you, Adrian? And you can say, I ride horses.
I would love to be able to say that. Yeah, I'm excited for that day to come.
That's pretty cool. Well, let's chat about buyer personas. And you're the founder of Best Buyer Persona. I'd love just for people to hear your story and how you started that, and what was that spark that caused you to say, hey, this is something that I really want to get into.
Yeah. So the idea for Best Buyer Persona came, I think it was 2018. I had been a freelance writer working for various levels of companies, doing just like one-off blog posts, essentially, or kind of retainer level blog posts where you'd write for a month, that kind of stuff. And some of the first questions I would ask when I get onboarded to a new client is, who's your audience? Who are we writing to? My background is in, I'm an English teacher, like by heart. That's what I started off doing. I have an English degree. So like, who is your audience is the first question you ask before you start writing to anybody. That's what I taught. That's what I know. And I was getting very generic answers. Mostly it was like, well, it's, you know, a mid-level manager of this kind of niche, or it's this job title, blah, blah, blah. And this is one thing they're concerned with. And there were very few people who, or very few companies who could really give me a full idea of who their buyer personas were, who their audience was. Or on the other end, they would give me a slide of like, or Google Slides presentation that has like 50 slides full of just like, I mean, tons of information, like who would their best buyer persona be if they were a superhero, their best persona's name, their favorite color, like all of these just random pieces of information that I was like, but how do I now write a piece to this person? I don't understand how that's going to help me, right? And how that helps you sell to them. So it really became this pain point. And I was really digging in and like learning how to do great audience research and how to ask questions and how from social scientists and journalists and just all different kinds of people who ask other people questions. I was really learning about it and kind of set my own curriculum up, and Jobs to Be Done came up. And I was like, oh, this is what I think a buyer persona should be. It's not full of like wasteful information. It's really down to like who your customer is and what are they doing with your product. And once you can know that, once you have that information down, it's a lot easier to sell to them. So that was kind of that first beginnings of the idea of like, what is this thing? How can we reach these people better? How can I write to them better, essentially?
Really, really fascinating. And I want to hammer home that point. I think you kind of mentioned a little bit about it already with what is wrong with, you know, what is your, if you had like a pet peeve around how marketers are doing personas, this is your time to air it out. What are marketers doing wrong with personas?
So many things. Okay. So this could go on for a very long time, so stop me if I go too far.
No, keep going.
Number one, why do they need a name? Why does your buyer persona need a name? Who is Mary Marketer? Who is Sally Sales Girl? How does that help you do anything? And here's their argument. Well, it makes them more relatable, right? Like they're a real person. I'm going to know who they are. No, it doesn't. at all. It's an alliteration. You are not selling to one person. You are selling to a group of people that you have gathered data, and now you're trying to treat it as it's one person. And that's going to do a disservice to a lot of people inside that segment, right? Like, it's going to really hurt a lot of people in your market. Same thing for pictures. Why are we giving these fake buyer personas a headshot? Like, you know, Mark's sitting there and he's like got a Rolex and he's grinning, and it's like a fake. First of all, you just Googled it, right? Like, and you put it on there. I Googled it. Google buyer personas, do the image search, and look at the amount of diversity that's there. Very little. There's very little. If there's a woman, she's white. And I did not see a Black man. I did not, like, people of color don't exist on buyer personas. And that was just my one Google image search. That I'm sure there's a company out there. And my other point is, somebody will say, but we made ours, you know, a BIPOC, you know, a person of color. And so we're really showing this diversity. And it's like, no, you're not. Because if your audience isn't 100% a Black male and you've represented them as a Black male, you're wrong some of the time. So why? Why even bother with that? That's not the information that helps you sell. So you're wasting time. You're wasting energy. Why are we also creating entire buyer personas around job titles or ages or genders? Like, if I had, for instance, an example that I can think of is when I was a teacher, I used Ticonderoga pencils. Nobody can say the name. It's a really good pencil. Dixon Ticonderoga, whatever. Somebody will correct it. They're really good pencils. They don't smudge. They don't smear when you erase them. The tip stays really good for a long time. So teachers buy these and they use them all the time. But guess what? I haven't been in a classroom in 10 years and I still buy a mega pack every single year. So if they did their segmentation as only teachers or people we're going to advertise to, they would have lost me because I'm not in that segment anymore. I don't buy the pencils because I'm a teacher. I buy the pencils because I value clean and clear writing utensils. So let's not segment people or market people only according to a job title. People leave those all the time. That's a very frivolous way to attract your audience or to market to your audience. You're constantly going to have to be finding new individuals. When if what you're looking at is a pain point or a job, what they've hired your thing to do, what it's doing for them in their life, that's going to go with them if they move jobs or if they move job titles or if they're a male, female, white, Black, red, like that's going to change with them. It's not just these artificial segmentations that we've decided we need to put on things. That was a rant.
No, that's, I was just thinking while you were going through this, like some of the best episodes I've listened to are rants just because I think it clearly is a problem and it's like a status quo that needs to be challenged, which I really love. Yes. You've talked about like, here's what people shouldn't do. You know, you've already alluded about jobs to be done. Can you explain about why that is the better way? Why, you know, job to be done by persona is really the better way?
Yes. And I also want to clarify, like, there's probably some jobs to be done purists out there, and they might be upset with the way I'm utilizing it. So I've kind of taken the jobs to be done framework and shifted a little bit and fit it into what I think it kind of works for this buyer persona process. But the over idea of jobs to be done is in, I think it was the 90s, 2003, Clayton Christensen, who is one of the founders, did publish something on Harvard Business Review. And they realized that people were not hiring or using products because of certain qualifications or because of certain ideals, but they were really using things, paying for things, so that those things could do something for them, right? So he uses one of the first examples that I saw was milkshakes. So a company hired him, maybe it was McDonald's or somebody, like they basically had milkshakes in their menu. They were a fast food joint, and they couldn't figure out why their milkshakes were selling. So he goes in and he observes the first day and he notices that people come in, get their milkshake, go to the car and leave, or they're going through the drive through and they leave. And their peak times were early morning and then like right at 3 o'clock-ish. And so the second day he kind of goes out and once somebody just bought a milkshake, they didn't get fries or they didn't get an Egg McMuffin or whatever they was on the menu. And he would say like, why did you purchase this milkshake? And he found that the overwhelming response was they were using it as a snack that they could drink in the car. It would keep them entertained and full until lunch. So, or the afternoon, that 3 o'clock time was the same concept, but for kids coming out of school. So people were hiring milkshakes to stay full and stay entertained on commutes. And that allowed them to really add in and actually meet the needs of their market in a different way, rather than just saying, oh, it's for, you know, business professionals of the age of like 20 to 35. Well, no, it wasn't. It was actually for people who were going to take long commutes and who some kind of like sustenance between breakfast and lunch or between lunch and dinner. So that's basically the idea of what a jobs to be done is.
That makes a lot of sense. And in terms of, I can see how this applies to personas then, like you're actually now, instead of segmenting by, you were talking about job titles or names, now you're segmenting by the jobs that people hire those products for. Is that what is essentially what the job to be done by persona is?
Yes, exactly. So what I do when I'm doing my buyer personas is we do a lot of audience research. So that means I'm getting on the phone with current customers through three different segments. So I say it's the best customers, the like meh customers, and your worst fit customers, your greatest enemies. And so what I'm looking for is to really clearly define who are your best fit customers. What are they doing? Why do they buy your product? And what are their buying triggers? So it does go beyond just what job have they hired your product to do. I really want to understand what are the motivations behind them using your product? Why did they choose it? And then how are they now currently using it in their process or in whatever situation they are using it?
When we come back in just a moment, Adrian shares the best way to get actionable insight from user interviews. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, Ahrefs Webmaster Tools. Now, Ahrefs Webmaster Tools help website owners get more traffic from search by improving their website's SEO performance. It does this in three easy ways. First, it scans your website for over 100 common SEO issues that might be hurting its performance in search engines. Second, it gives you actionable insights from your inbound and outbound link profiles. And third, it shows you what keywords your website ranks for and compare how you stack up against competitors in the search results page. Now, I took it for a test drive and I have to say that I'm very impressed with how easy it is to use and how useful the data they provided. It gave me a holistic view of how my website is doing and I got more actionable tips, insights, and strategies to get GrowthToday.fm ranking higher in search engines than Google Search Console. Sign up for free by going to growthtoday.fm/hrefs. That's A-H-R-E-F-S. Or find that link in the description of this show. Signing up is a breeze and it only takes a few clicks to get it set up. Well, enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Adrian. And I just got to give a shout out that you have this guide available on bestbuyerpersona.com. I'm going to add that in the show links for people to check out.
Yeah.
In terms of the research, are there any questions that you really dig into? Now, once you, first of all, how do you identify who your best fit customers are? Like, is that as simple as like people who paid, is it the people who pay the most? Like maybe, or is it another definition for what a best fit or the best customers are for your business?
Yeah. So that has varied so far project to project. One of them is the D2C e-com. So we basically said, okay, here's how much revenue each customer's brought in. And we did the top 15, we did the bottom 15, and then like the average 15 out of the average. So that was a really easy way to decipher who are your best customers. The ones with this particular client who had purchased the most product had been around actually for the longest time. So they'd spent thousands and thousands at this one for this one product, but they've been customers for 5 years. So it was like, well, why have you stuck around so long? What is it about this product? You know? another one of my clients, it's not a D2C e-commerce, it's a SaaS tool. So it's like, okay, who did was able to like sign on quickly, who hasn't had friction in the sign-on process and hasn't complained, hasn't had any churn, didn't need a whole lot of help from customer service, like has probably had a lot of a good relationship basically with the founders and with the other people who, the marketing team, their sales rep, that kind of thing. And then the worst fit customers were basically, okay, who turned quickly, who had huge issues with customer service rep, who basically left poor reviews on places, who shouted about how much we suck on social media. So those are the worst fit customers that I want to talk to too. It's funny, a lot of founders and people don't want me talk. I have to convince people to let me talk to the worst fit customers. Like they're like, that makes my palms sweat when you say we have to reach out to these people. And I get it. Like you don't want to have to like redrudge up a poor thing. But my intention with that is at one point, these people thought we were going to be a good fit. Something we said, something we did, something they came across led them to believe that what we had was what they needed. So where was that miscommunication? It's not that our product is bad. Tons of people like it. Like I've already talked to our best fit customers who praised us to the nines and had beautiful things to say and will never leave us. So we're a good product. Like we don't have to worry about that. But what was the missing signal? And that's what that worst fit customer kind of those kind of conversations will like reveal and show. It's very insightful.
That makes a lot of sense. In terms of like really getting to know whether it's the best fit or worst fit, what are some questions that you like asking, or are there any questions that you find is one of the most insightful?
Yes, I love a good question. I am a question collector. So I'm constantly on the lookout for just a good question. I just pulled up some of my question forms. So one of the things that I love is, why did you pick this product? Why did you choose it? If they're the buyer, sometimes in SaaS, you're talking to the user and not the buyer. So they're like, I don't know, it was already here. So you kind of have to also know who you're speaking to, but why did you pick it? And if there's a competitor, I like to say, well, why not competitor? Why not go for that one? And that really pulls out some of your USP, your differentiators, those unique things that are clearly important to your best buyers about your product. So sometimes that's a little challenging when founders see that question. They're like, oh, don't ask them why. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's going to be okay. Trust the process. And then my ultimate favorite question is why. It's really like, now tell me more about that. Oh, wait, you just said you loved something. Can you explain that more to me? And that's all essentially what I consider a why. It's just trying to get to the next level of whatever insight they just shared. It's me being genuinely curious, especially when they've shared a powerful emotion. Like they tell me they love something, or they tell me they hated it, or that was frustrating. Like, okay, now I need to go down to what does that mean to you? Because what's frustrating to me may not be frustrating to them. So I need to clearly identify what it is it that you found frustrating. And then why was it frustrating? What does that mean? And why was it there? Those are my favorite questions.
Those are, yeah, some really good ones. I want to go back a bit. And you mentioned it a few times about founders pushing back when you're asking these questions. And I'm sure people listening to this, they might be freelancers or marketers. When they say to their boss, most of the time the pushback is user research, you know, like that's going to take too long. Mm-hmm. You know, why should I do that? We shouldn't ask that. Like what are some ways that you've gotten around that in getting the buy-in from your clients to say, hey, this is the right path, and this is what this is the kind of question I need to be asking to really dig into who is buying your products.
Yeah. I think a lot of times the data can do it for you. So if I can show them some of the insights that I've gotten from customer conversations, from qualitative data, how that has transferred into impact copy or entire marketing campaigns, buyer, like all of the things, if this is done right, this process and this deliverable, this buyer persona, could impact everything. I mean, it's essentially usability research for UX teams. It's product research for product teams. It's buyer persona research for marketing teams. We're just putting different hats on it, right? Like, what is the job? Who are we talking to? What are the best customers? How are they using it? So in order to overcome those objections, it's just kind of like, here's the process. This is what we get. This is the value and the stretch of the dollar that you're going to be able to get with this kind of material. And once they've seen that, I haven't had very many other objections. Some of the objections come in the process itself, like, well, but why that question? Well, couldn't we just send a survey? I really don't want to talk to this many customers. And then that comes with a little bit of education. But overall, being one of the people who are like really advocating audience research, I think it's coming to its head too. Like, people are beginning to realize this is an important part of just your marketing and not just your data, right? Like the hardcore data from the back end. Cause I do a lot of that too. I've got some analytics software that I use that helps to inform some things, but there is nothing as valuable as your own customer's word.
Yeah. And that, because those words can be, you mentioned it already, it can be applied to so many things, including copy and emails and conversions. So it really does like drive home those words that they're using can be applied to so many things, right?
Yeah. And then within the buyer persona, I call them relational keywords. So like, for instance, when I'm doing a content strategy, I pull SEO keywords, and then I've already done some of the audience research, and I pull out what I call relational keywords. And that's just the language that your customer is using when they're talking about your own, your product. And if we can make sure that we use those in our content and copy in our marketing campaigns, it just erases any level of friction that maybe they're unknowingly, essentially.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. One question I had is, how do you get from the interviews and research piece to actually getting to the insights, those words? That's the messy middle. And do you have any tips for people so that it doesn't get too messy that it just, everything gets lost in a pile?
Yeah, that is the messy middle for sure. So what I like to do is make sure I have really good transcription software and that we're recording each interview and that that interview is then transcribed. Because if you have a good transcription, it's going to be easier to analyze your data and like parse it through. As I'm going along, I kind of make mental notes and put onto my spreadsheets, like what kind of topics were really important? What kind of frustrations or friction was aligned? What were some wins or like value that was there? And so as I'm going through it, the buyer persona is kind of developing. And then with the transcription, it's a simple process of copy and paste, but that can also be, it's just time consuming. Essentially, you're really trying to find the words that support and that show different aspects of who your customer is and like, and what the job is that they've done with your product.
That makes sense. And you, when we were jumping on the Zoom call, there was a tool. Do you use that? What is it? Fireflies? That
Fireflies.
AI? Is that the thing you use?
Yes. Yes. So Fireflies is my, basically they're a note-taking app. So they pop into every meeting that's on my calendar. And I admit them, and then it records, but it only transcribes the meeting. And so I can go through there and it'll tag for me. So if I say like, what was, like, if I know one of my customers or the clientele's frustrating words was annoying. Like if I heard the word annoying 10 times in calls, then I'll tag annoying. And every phrase that has the word annoying, it'll get pulled up and I can see where it is and what the customer said about it and what we were talking about. And then that can kind of help to inform who, like the relationship, role, responsibility of the buyer persona, all of those different aspects that really flesh out the buyer persona. Because I feel like I can't say something in a buyer persona without a customer's quote. So that's something that's always in best buyer persona is, this is what I've said. This is the quote that supports it.
Right. Okay. I think we're starting to get there. Like, so you've done the research, you've recorded it. Now you have some quotes. What else is in that best buyer persona? You talked about quotes. You talked about that it shouldn't have a name, but yeah. I'm curious now, what are the stuff that you include into those, that best buyer persona.
Yeah. I want to make sure. So there, it is important that we not give them a silly name, Mary the Marketer, or Sally the Sales Girl, but that you identify this segment, right? So I've always said, if they are, let's say that most of the people in this segment enjoy soccer, then call them like the soccer players, or maybe they're all foodies. They love foodies. Let's just call them, this is the foodie segment, right? Like they're really obsessed with food, or whatever the thing is that they're doing, like really name it according to the segment, not just according to a job title or a position. So I actually have a buyer persona template that I've shared with everybody on Twitter. And if anybody in your audience would like to see it, they can feel free to DM me or email me. But it was the developer. So I created a fake product called, oh gosh, it was a course. Level up an educational course to advance your career, totally made up. And I even say like, don't copy this. This is fake. Your buyer persona will suck if you like use this data. But, essentially what I want to show in the buyer persona is like the overview. What are the goals that this person will have, that this audience has? And I don't want to lose sight of that. So when I say a buyer persona, I constantly want to remember that this is a group of people. So where standard buyer personas now want to say, this is a group of people, but we're narrowing it to one person. I say, I think we're doing that a disservice. We need to constantly be recognizing this is a segment of people. This is a group. This is an audience. This is not like, if we just say one person, I don't know. I feel like we'll be missing a lot of nuance that should be involved in a buyer persona and in our marketing. For numerous reasons, empathy is the first thing that comes to mind. Like if you're not able to say, you know, this is a large group of people and these are kinds of things that are commonly concerned, then you're not going to have very much empathy in your marketing. So what we show in the best buyer persona, their goals. What are some overall goals that maybe this type of audience will be focused on? We have their like relationships, rituals, roles, and responsibilities. I've worked with products where, like software developers are really hard audience to get to. Everybody knows it. They are very marketing. They're anti-marketing. They don't want nothing to do with it. And they're really smart and they're very logical and like punctual, you know, speaking as a whole and generalizing this entire group of people. But every time I've run into it, it's like, well, we're trying to reach software developers. So a good way to do that is the relationships, right? Like who is it in their organization that they have relationships with? Who's above them? Who do they report to? Who reports to them? Who are like their peers and other kinds of organizations? Because if you can speak to those people too, eventually like you can create a virality effect by impacting all of the people around the people, if that makes sense. So that's an important thing to know. Let's see, rituals, responsibilities. And then I like to look at like their trusted media influencers and platforms. Where are they at online? Who are they looking to? If they need to go to learn something new, are they going to YouTube or are they going to Coursera? When they spend time online, is it Reddit? Is it Twitter? Is it Instagram? Is it Facebook? Because those are all, even as users of those products, they have a personality of themselves, right? Like they seem to like create different kinds of communities. So that's always important to know. And then what are their motivation and buying triggers? What is their buyer journey or their content basically map? What was the thing that was going on in their company that made them decide to buy your product? And then how was that emotionally connected? Like what was the feelings inside of them? What were the feelings inside of like, were they stressed? Was it concern? You know, those kinds of things are really important to know. Frustrations, do they have frustrations with this type of product, with your competitors, with your product? It's important to know, like, is there something that there's a commonality of, I don't like this about our industry. And that kind of helps you become a disruptor for future products or innovation. Those kinds of slides really help me develop that kind of recommendations. And then aspirations, do they have goals? Are they looking to go somewhere? And then I like to include those relational keywords that basically become word maps of, you know, your customer said these words the most and these words the least, but this is kind of the wording and stuff that your clients are using. And then we go the job that they're hiring the product to do. What is it that these people are trying to do with your product or service?
Those are some, while you're saying all of this stuff, I'm like, yep, this is something marketing needs. Yeah. This is something the product can use. This is something product marketing can use. A question I have is like, you know, often people create companies, people within companies create personas and they just file it away and it's gone.
Yep.
What would be your suggestion so that that doesn't happen? Like this amazing insights that is so actionable that can be applied to so many different aspects of growing a company isn't just tucked away and forgotten.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing. First of all, it's a marketing checkbox activity, right? Like you have to do it because your CMO or the CEO said, we need to buy our persona. And so you're like, oh crap. So you sit down one afternoon and you Google some stuff and you throw some stuff into the buyer persona, or maybe you've even spent some time and you do some data analytics type stuff and you've pulled it and then it's done and you present it and they're like, great. Okay. And then, yeah, like you said, it gets put into your Google Drive and nobody opens it up again until some crazy freelancer comes by and says, hey, can I see your buyer personas? And you're like, oh, wait, hold on. Let me go find that way back somewhere that we haven't looked at. I mean, literally they'll hand it to me and say, but we don't use this. This is why I knew it was a problem. How many of my clients handed me their buyer personas? And I'm not throwing them under the bus. It's because the buyer persona process is broken and we need to fix it. And they know it's broken. There just wasn't, there was no other solution around. But they would, they'd hand it to me and say, we don't ever really use this. Like we know inside of our heads, but this is where it is laid out. So what I really like to preach is that this is not a one and done check, great, glad that was over process. The best way to continue these insights and add to it, that's first of all, why it's a Google slide for me, is because I want you to continually be able to add to it and shift it and change it. And it's talking to your customers. And I say, really, you can get this done in an hour a week. Now it'll take you a year because you'll be speaking to like one customer a week. So maybe not a year, 6 months. But if you can really just set aside some time, 1 hour a week, to have one conversation with one customer where you're not trying to sell to them, where you're not trying to upgrade a product, or you're not going to fix their problem. You are really just sitting there trying to listen to how they use your product, what's going on in their own company. Even if they have a problem, like it's really hard for people inside companies to hear about a problem and not want to fix it, right? So that's something where I'm trying to train, where it's like, but don't fix it. Have those conversations with your customers and then continually add what you've learned to your current buyer persona. Like I have a service where on top of the buyer persona, it's customer development, right? So we'll come in and do those one interviews a week for you. You get three of the best takeaways. Here's what most of the people said. And that's, you know, basically an email to the CEO or the CMO or whoever needs it. And it's just a great way to stay in contact with your customers and fresh on those pain points. When you do it, you're able to not be taken by surprise when the climate in the market shifts. Like how many times have we seen it where it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that everybody was going this way. Well, had you had conversations 6 months ago, you'd have probably seen this coming.
I love that. I really love that it's not a PDF that is hard to edit, right? It's a presentation that you're updating when as you're learning, right? That's really, really great advice. Speaking of which, I'd like to start wrapping up. And you know, one question I love asking is, we've talked a lot about different things today around jobs to be done, personas. But if you can give one or two pieces of advice to marketers who are listening in, and it could be about personas or it can be about marketing in general or content, what would be those like one or two pieces or three pieces, however many advice you'd like to leave marketers who are listening in right now?
Yeah, I would say don't be afraid to get on the phone and don't automatically think that you're going to have to incentivize. So many marketers are like, they haven't even sent out the survey question yet, or they haven't even asked their questions, and they're already in their head, this self-limiting belief of no one's going to want to talk to me. No one is going to want to fill in my calendar. Well, I'm here to tell you, I've had to turn customers away because my calendar gets full so fast. So people want to share. They don't want to be sold to. They don't want to be marketed to, but they do want to share their experiences. So don't be afraid to get on the phone. Don't be afraid to ask for those conversations. And then really also think outside of every other thing you've seen. Like, is your buyer persona doing you any good? Are you using it? Was it just a check the box marketing practice? And if it was, maybe it's time to like reinvent, to relook at it, to give it a fresh update, an audit of sorts, really use those conversations to inform the information on the buyer persona and ask yourself, are we using each information in our marketing? Like each piece of information that we share in our buyer persona, is it something that informs our marketing? And if it's not, is it needed? And if it's not needed, why is it there?
That makes a lot of sense. Those are some really great advice. And just one final question. Where can people find out more about you, your work? Like, this is your time for a call to action. Do you want them to follow you on Twitter, LinkedIn? Do you want them to check out your stuff on your website?
Yes, absolutely. So it's bestbuyerpersona.com. I am at Adrienne Nicole, N-A-K-O-H-L on Twitter. I tweet a lot. So that's a very easy place to find me. And you know, if you're in the middle of a project and you're stuck, like feel free to reach out. I really want this message to get across. I want marketing teams to be able to use this kind of buyer persona that's actually going to impact business decisions and business growth and just do a lot of, I feel like it's a lot of good. I feel like it's a good spot to be. So I'm happy to help and inform and advise in any way I can.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Adrienne. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great fun. Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode. I want to remind you to download the free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from Adrienne all about personas in a one-page PDF. Seriously, why take notes when you can just steal mine? You can go to growthtoday.fm/132 to get it now or find that link in the description. Before I end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode again. They help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so we can focus on getting amazing experts like Adrienne on this show. Thanks to Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. Find the top keywords you rank for, track new organic keywords, get more in-depth backlink data, and perform a site audit all for free using Ahrefs Webmaster Tool. You can sign up for free today at growthtoday.fm/Ahrefs. That's A-H-R-E-F-S. Or find that link in the description of the show. Please also support me. There's three easy ways. First, you can tell a friend about the show. If you found this episode with Adrienne valuable, you can forward that email I sent to my subscribers or just send them a link to the show. Second, you can join the Grow Today mailing list if you're not already part of that. I email out every Thursday morning the free growth cheat sheet so you don't have to keep coming back to the site. And third, if you've listened this far, I would really appreciate it if you go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes and leave a review. It really does help to get more people to know about the show. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe. And as always, keep on growing.